because she needed a slightly different from what they are. When we talk, she hates her.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. How are you doing tonight, Alison?
I'm doing well.
Good to know. On tonight's show, I'm going to be talking to Jonathan, who has multiple experiences, some of them pretty intense. He seemed to have been followed by something, unless the same type of thing started showing up in two different places, from Florida to California. This red-eyed, upright wolf thing.
It made the journey with him when he moved?
I mean, put another check in the column of these things not being physical animals. And he's got some abduction experiences, UFOs and so forth. Before we talk to Jonathan, I want to thank our patrons. Patrons, thank you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your help. We could not do Strange Familiars without you. We wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I was going to say we wouldn't.
Yeah. Without you guys, no Strange Familiars. If you like what we do, if you like Strange Familiars and you'd like to get extra content, please consider becoming a patron at Patreon, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. All of our patrons get commercial-free versions of the weekly shows. They drop often before the episode drops in the regular podcast feed. Sometimes that's minutes before. Sometimes it's a good while before.
Technicality before.
Yeah. And bonus episodes besides. We do at least one full bonus episode of Strange Familiars for our patrons every month. Often we do more. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Again, if you want to sign up. We also have a subscription on Apple Podcasts. You can sign up there and get commercial-free shows and the bonus shows as well. Albatwitch Day, Allison.
Your favorite day of the year.
October 14th, Saturday.
Columbia, Pennsylvania.
I think everyone listening should come. Every single person. Our listeners from Japan. Our listeners from Ireland.
Australia especially. Australia. You definitely want to have more than a day's flight to go to Columbia, Pennsylvania.
We definitely have some New Zealand listeners. All throughout the States. Europe. England.
You can name countries. I'm pretty impressed. What about our Canadian friends?
Canadian listeners. All of them. They should all come to Albatwitch Day. Make the journey. To come see us at Albatwitch Day. You know why? Because it's the greatest day of the year.
In Colombia, it certainly is.
It's better than my birthday, and that's saying something. No, Albatwitch Day is great. I love it so much. I love getting to see all the listeners and just talking to people. And often we get a few new stories. People got spooky stories, especially local stories of creatures and stuff. Usually it seems like a big, fun, Strange Familiars party, though, so I'd love to see everybody there who can make it. I'm not speaking.
So you can just come and hang out.
Exactly. It's kind of good in a way. I mean, you know, if you wanted to see me speak, I guess it's not so good. But I will be speaking at Strange Realities, which is, I think it's streamed online. So you can see me speak there. But
we can actually have private conversations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to speak at Albatwitch Day whenever they ask me to. It's like an honor. And, you know, I feel like I've been coming since year one.
Yeah, and this is the 10th anniversary.
Yeah. But also, like, not speaking has its advantages, too. And one is just being able to be there all day, hang out, talk to people, sign books and everything.
It's a nice day next to the river, too. It's just scenic and
there's a ton of vendors. Not all of them paranormal. You got artists. You got, you know, a handful of paranormal things. You got food vendors. Usually good food out there.
You can't have, like, a local Pennsylvania event without a food vendor. No one would show up.
Yeah, yeah. Albatwitch Day will be selling the Albatwitch t-shirts of their own. We, Strange Familiars, are going to have three new t-shirt designs.
Plus the old standbys, which may be new to you.
Right. Two of the three t-shirt designs have never been on t-shirts before. One is something I'd done for TeePublic, which we don't have that shop anymore. So this will be a silkscreen version, though, which I greatly prefer silkscreen printing to that digital printing that TeePublic does. So It's a great time to come out and get new shirts. We might have a few hoodies of one design, too. We've got a lot of things, a lot of irons in the fire here. And if everything works out, we'll have 3 new t-shirt designs and a handful of hoodies as well.
Some bags, too, right?
Oh, yeah, and some tote bags. Yeah, I forgot.
Big enough, your specification was big enough to put records in them.
Big enough to put records in. I doubt I'll be bringing any Stone Breath records to sell because we were going to have so much other stuff there that day, but you could put records in them. Or your 3 t-shirts, your 3 new Strange Familiars t-shirts that you get there. But if you don't have any money, just come out anyway because it's just a great day to hang.
Yeah, just be by the river, walk around, see people. And then Columbia is just such a great little town, and it's really flourishing as a million antique stores, vintage clothing stores.
Cafes and restaurants. You know, there's other things to do. They'll have music, of course. They're going to have ghost tours. I think the trolley tours. So there's a ton of things to do for all ages there. So come on out. Albatwitch Day, it's by the river in Columbia on October 14th. It's right in the shadow of the bridge, the Columbia-Wrightsville Bridge, which isn't the one that burned down in the Civil War.
But it's in a similar location.
Yeah, it's near. So if you find the bridge that goes across the river, you're not far from Albatwitch Day festivities. I think it starts at 10 in the morning and goes till 3 or 4. We usually get there earlier than 10 and end up staying a little bit later because
there's a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot going on and things kind of wind down slowly.
Doesn't cost anything to get in. So
that's what I mean. Yeah, so I'm saying if you don't have any money, just come hang out.
Yeah.
We have the big black pop-up tent. Usually I have a big Bigfoot banner, one of my Bigfoot drawings hanging from it. Chad will be there. We'll have some Ruck Rabbit-y stuff, I'm sure, some wool and knives and so forth. Saturday, October 14th in Columbia, Pennsylvania, Albatwitch Day, 10th annual. Hope to see you there. All right, I'm going to be talking with Jonathan. Just a little content warning before we start. Jonathan does mention some drug and alcohol use in this interview. It's not extreme, but
if you're listening with kids or something.
Yeah, if you're listening with kids, maybe you want to check it out first and then decide if you want your kids to listen. There is some pretty serious consequences to one of these alcohol-related stories. So just putting that out there for the listeners. All right, let's go ahead and talk with Jonathan. I'd like to welcome Jonathan to the show. How are you doing tonight, Jonathan?
I'm doing all right.
Thanks for coming on Strange Familiars. You got a series of experiences that look pretty interesting to me. When did all this start for you? I think in your email you said it started at a pretty young age.
Yeah, pretty much my whole life has been a little weird. There's like periods of time where nothing strange happened. Mm-hmm. But one of my first memories is of laying in bed and there being a pair of glowing red eyes, like self-illuminated red eyes, looking at me through the window. And that started the first time I remember. I was maybe 3.5, 4 years old when we lived in Florida before we moved. Sorry, I might get a little emotional.
Oh, no, that's okay.
So it started when I was like 3 or 4. It lasted up until I was like 9 or 10. The activity followed us from Florida because my father retired from the Air Force. And we moved to California to live with my grandmother. And she lived out in an unincorporated area in Solano County, California, kind of by like Napa and Sonoma, on a 7-acre property with like a private lake, not in the middle of nowhere, but it was, you know, like a 15-minute drive to get into town, the nearest city. And actually, I realized something kind of funny. After I emailed you the first time, I was looking up the property in case you wanted to see it on Google Maps or whatever. And the crossroad that connects to the road it's on is Tim's Road.
Huh.
So there's a little bit of the name game going on there.
Yeah. Now, when you say the activity continued, you mean specifically these red eyes or just general?
Specifically the red eyes. And then also when I was about 7.5, 8 years old, I believe I had an abduction experience.
Let's take these one at a time.
Yes.
Did you have any impression or any thoughts what these red eyes were?
Yeah, I actually am fairly certain that it was a wolf-like creature.
And are you basing that on just your impressions or what?
The best I saw was an outline, but I also proceeded to have dreams throughout my entire life. Like, I still have them to today occasionally, where the same red eyes and the creature were, like, chasing me. And it's one of those very realistic dreams. And I know I'm asleep, which is unusual because I don't usually lucid dream, but it hunts me. And eventually it will catch me and kill me in the dream. And I always wake up, like, gasping as soon as that happens.
Wow. Now, is this an upright wolf thing or is just a...
Yes, very, very much so. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be cliche, but think like Van Helsing kind of looking creature.
Now, when you were seeing these at your window, were you on a ground floor?
No, second floor. But there is a sloped roof that is easy to access outside the window I was seeing it out of.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And my sister and I were sharing a bedroom. We had bunk beds at the time, and I could never get her to wake up when it was happening. It was one of those things.
Oh, that's very interesting, too. That's very interesting.
Someone else, yeah, and I tried telling my mom, but of course, kids get blown up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just kid stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah, which is weird, because, growing up, my mother was pagan and into a lot of really weird stuff. It's totally the kind of thing she would believe in happening to somebody else, but trying to tell her that something like that is happening to me, she just didn't take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. And it might be that, well, it's always harder with people who know you, I think, with this stuff. I find that, the people that know you are it's not that they're the least likely to believe you, but they're the most likely to say, well, maybe you saw something else. Maybe it was this, maybe it was that, where people who don't know me seem more willing to accept this stuff at face value.
Yeah, I guess it is a little easier to dismiss when it's close to home.
Yeah. And the other thing is maybe she did kind of understand something was going on and just did not want to deal with it.
Considering a couple other things, that's actually very possible. I didn't really think about that until recently, but she very well could have experienced similar activity. She's just never admitted to that in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who will read about this stuff or listen to podcasts or be otherwise involved with it. And when it comes to personal stuff, they'll just shut down. Even if it could be happening right to them, and they'll just shut down. They want, nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I did that for a very long time. I'm 34, and I just started coming to terms with all of this within the last 2 years or so because of a certain experience I had that I'm sure we'll get to. But it just got to the point where I couldn't deny it anymore. I was like, this actually seems like it's happening, because the whole time I'm like, no, I'm just losing my mind.
Yeah.
I'm just crazy. Like,
you said these red eyes sort of followed you. So were you seeing them still through the window and stuff at night?
Wait, what do you mean by, still now?
Well, you said when you were younger, the activity seemed to follow you when you moved.
Yes, okay.
Was that the red eyes?
Yes, that was the red eyes.
Yeah, and so were you still seeing them through the window, wherever you moved to this other location? Okay.
Yeah, the location where we were on the second floor was where I saw them through the window. So I saw them through the window in Florida, but I was pretty young mm-hmm. when we moved, and I don't have a lot of clear memories. I just remember the red eyes and a couple other things. And the window in Florida was on the ground floor.
Okay.
We moved to California. The window's on the second floor. But, it was like a roof you could go outside on.
Yeah, well, things climbing on roofs are a special interest of mine as regards this stuff. So I'm sort of not surprised, but also kind of extra interested if something's on a roof and looking in your windows. Very, very interesting.
Can I ask if there's a particular reason why you're interested in things on roofs?
Sure, because it comes up in folklore. It comes up in Bigfoot accounts. It comes up in these, quote-unquote dogman accounts, if that's what we want to call these things. I don't think that's a very good name for them, but it's a fine shorthand term, I guess. But it comes up in Draugr accounts from Norse mythology. It comes up in folklore about Perkta, about these things climbing on roofs. Now, why is that? Like, it's so weird. It's such a weird detail. But these stories from all over the world of these folklore creatures getting up on roofs are, you know, specifically noted. In fact, one of the places you would leave offerings for Perkta, she's like sort of a fairy-like figure in Germanic regions, but she's accompanied by this retinue of wild men and glowing orbs, which I find super interesting. But you would actually leave offerings for her on the roof. You would leave bowls of milk for her on the roof. So whenever I hear about anything climbing on roofs, and there's been tons of accounts of Bigfoot and Dogman and all this other stuff climbing on people's roofs, and often, I mean, I've been on some local calls where people say, oh yeah, this thing was on my roof, and they live in a little trailer. And I'm thinking, like, an 8-foot-tall Bigfoot was on your roof? Like, I used to do telephone work. I'd be on the top of trailers and construction sites and stuff wiring them. I've almost put my foot through the roof. Something the size of Bigfoot would leave a major mark. So it's not that I don't believe the witnesses. I absolutely believe them. They're far too serious and far too affected by this stuff to be lying, I think. So what's happening there? Like, how does that work? And it's just very, very interesting to me. It's something I haven't figured out, but it is something that you hear again and again, these things on roofs.
Okay, yeah, I've heard some stories involving roofs. I didn't know it went back that far into folklore.
Well, do you want to talk about this abduction or possible abduction next? I know abduction is never an easy thing to talk about, trust me.
Yeah, I didn't tell anybody about this until very recently, because I convinced myself it was a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I tried to tell my mother what had happened, she said, oh no, that's just a dream. But I don't think it is anymore, because of the experience of coming to terms with being a quote unquote abductee. I don't necessarily believe I was physically taken.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a really weird, really weird experience. Putting these things together, where it started was in the same bedroom that I had the creature looking through the window at me. And I woke up one night to a light, and I was on the top bunk, and I kind of looked over into the room to figure out what was going on. And there were three Borg, like from Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Except they had the stereotypical, like, big almond-shaped gray alien eyes.
Mm. So they had, like, I don't know what to call it, like the sort of cybernetic stuff that the Borg had on them?
Yeah, no, they looked, like, dead on, mm-hmm. like the Borg from Star Trek, which it sounds absolutely crazy, and that's why I convinced myself that it wasn't real. But I've had other experiences since then. They took me because I saw them, and then I became paralyzed. They took me, and they touched me, and I passed out, and I woke up on a table. Oh, I woke up on a table with the three of them around me, and they performed surgery on me. And I have a very vivid memory of them, like, cutting all of my limbs open.
Wow.
Like, starting at the joint and, like, working their way down the limb, cutting it open and, like, tinkering around in there. And then they also cut open my torso. And I tried to struggle. I couldn't move. They told me to calm down telepathically. Like, the communication was in my head.
Mm-hmm.
They told me to calm down. They were like, we're not trying to hurt you. We're upgrading you. We're making you better.
Wow.
And then I kind of passed back out and woke up in my bed, like, crying and freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
I was very upset.
Yeah, that's intense.
Yeah.
Could you feel pain when they were working on you?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, wow.
I could feel the pain. There's no anesthesia, no numbing at all. It was just straight up, like, being cut up and put back together.
Wow. So I don't expect that there were, but did you have any marks when you woke up?
I don't know. Actually, I didn't even think to look at the time because I was, you know, maybe 7 and a half, 8 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And extremely upset. And I just straight up, like, ran to my mom and was like, hey, I had this thing happen to me. You know, I saw the Borg in my room and they took me. And of course, it gets dismissed as a dream.
Yeah. I mean, so I didn't even look for marks after mine, and I was 18 or 19 or however old I was. So I don't blame you. I don't know that there would be. That doesn't mean it wasn't real. You know what I mean?
But I have had experiences where I woke up and had marks.
Oh, yeah? Like other abduction-type experiences?
I think so. Those I don't have as clear a memory of.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, so I think I was listening to your podcast, and someone was describing their abduction experiences. And the way they phrased it was that when it was getting ready to happen, they would lay in bed and hear the sound of a street sweeper.
Mm-hmm.
I had a panic attack hearing that, and I had so many memories flood back about laying in bed, like panicking to the sound of a street sweeper.
Wow.
After one of those experiences, I woke up and I had like a straight, razor straight incision on the back of my, what's the part that attaches to your foot called? Like the back of my foot where it connects to the leg.
Oh, like the Achilles tendon or whatever there.
Yeah, yeah, just like a straight up like razor straight cut. And aside from like nosebleeds, that's the only mark I've ever woken up with.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's really, really intense. Very specific memory for, did you say you were like 7 or something the first time?
Like 7.5 and 8. It was, we moved to California basically on my 7th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And this was it was within a year of us moving there because we were still living with my grandmother.
Yeah.
At the time.
It was very, very specific. Dream, quote unquote dream, for a young kid to come up with, and very intense. I don't think it was a dream. Now
I don't either.
Now, were you really physically in body taken? I don't know. I have the same question about myself, you know, or is this something that happens out of body? I don't know. I don't have any answers, but everything you say sounds like any number of these other abduction experiences people report.
Yeah, I've never heard somebody describe the Borg.
No, but the entities.
Other than that,
the entities are different. But you know, who knows what that could be? You know, were they really different entities, or is this just the costume you put on them, in a sense? You know.
Yeah.
Might I have seen a traditional gray where you saw that? You know, I don't know. It's very disturbing and very interesting at the same time.
Yeah.
What is your impression? Do you think you were bodily taken? What is your impression?
I do not.
Yeah, okay.
I do not think I was bodily taken. Mm-hmm. I feel like just like the dreams I had about the werewolf-like creature chasing me and killing me, I think it is my experiences were entirely not physical.
Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to explain to people. It's like, well, yes, but that doesn't mean they weren't real and they didn't happen. And
yeah, I mean, our bodies are just a shell.
Yeah, sure. Do you have a different feeling about these, or that experience, or the ones you remember, the abduction things, as opposed to like your regular run-of-the-mill dream, anxiety dream about, you know, I didn't get whatever work done or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 1,000%.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of the big dream versus little dream.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it. Yeah.
And there's an awareness that I have in the quote-unquote big dreams where I know that this is technically a dream. And I've lucid dreamed a couple times and can, you know, kind of control it. Not a lot, but it's happened a little bit. And I'm aware that I'm dreaming, but everything feels like 1,000% real. And I can't change anything.
Mm-hmm. The way I can explain it to people, the only way I can make it make sense is to say it's so real. It's like almost more real than regular waking life. I don't know how to explain that. It's very intense. Maybe it's just because whatever's happening is shocking and unusual, and you become hypersensitized. Like, I don't know if you've ever experienced being in a car accident or something traumatic like that, where it seems like time slows way down.
Yeah.
It's something maybe like that might be happening. I don't know. But whatever it is, even if it is a dream, it's not like a normal dream. Whatever's happening is just, it's so different. It's hard to explain. What you're saying is like, it makes sense to me, and it's what a number of other people have said as regards to stuff.
You actually think I might have gotten my phrasing of the big dream versus little dream thing from you. So
I think I got it from Sarai, and he probably got it from somebody else.
That's actually how I found you, was through Where Did the Road Go?
We're passing it down the lane here. So you've seen UFOs, though, in waking life, yes?
Yes. I have three major UFO sightings. Like, very clear, this was not a conventional aircraft. Two of them... I guess technically all three, I can't say if they were human or not, but they did not exhibit the characteristics of a normal aircraft at all. And all of them were seen close enough to be certain of that. I grew up in like an Air Force family, literally lived at the end of a runway. My entire childhood was in like Air Force ROTC in high school for a little bit, been to tons of air shows. The whole nine yards. I've wanted to get my pilot's license forever. Like, I love aviation. I'm very familiar with the characteristics of aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'll just start at the first one.
Yeah, please.
We were going to family counseling. I was 16 years old. I kind of felt like I was getting railroaded a little bit in the counseling session. And so I went outside to smoke a cigarette. I look up in the air, and there is an absolutely massive, transparent, translucent craft. It is at least 500 feet wide. It's a huge triangle. It's passing over me, and like I can see the stars behind it. And then I blink, and it's like 45 minutes later, and the session is over.
Oh. Wow.
So that's one of the experiences of missing time I have.
Yeah. Wow. So, huge ship, and you said it was like kind of translucent.
Yeah, it was clear. Like, you could see through it. Like I could see the stars behind it, but everything was kind of distorted.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, there was a very clear outline of this thing.
I know it's really difficult to estimate how high things are, especially in night sky. You have any estimate?
Yeah, I have no idea how high it was. I just know it was massive.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't even realize I had missing time there until recently, because I kind of had like a catalyst event that started bringing these memories back. That's something that immediately preceded my other two UFO sightings.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that it's related, but this would be an easy one to dismiss, because is it okay to mention the use of mushrooms on your show?
Yeah, as long as we're noting that's what was going on, that's no problem.
Okay, I took like an absolutely massive dose of psilocybin mushrooms. I got like a tincture that was really strong and kind of overdid it a little bit. And I was laying in bed, and I started getting the street sweeper noise, because I was laying down to meditate,
because
I didn't do that for like recreational purposes. I do it for like internal soul searching purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I was laying down to meditate, and I get the street sweeper noise, and the next thing I know, I am sucked out of my body, and I'm like flying through space at what I'm assuming was light speed.
Wow.
It was incredibly fast. And I stop at this space station. Like, I wind up inside a space station talking to this being who was not a stereotypical gray. He kind of had, like, a more pronounced, like, brow ridge and brown skin. And I don't remember the whole conversation, but I do remember speaking to this entity and begging him to let me come home. I was like, I'm done being here. I just kind of want to come home. And he told me, no. He said, you're not done yet. You haven't experienced enough sorrow.
Wow.
Like, you need to finish learning. And I'm like, fine, I'll go back. But you have to let me remember. Like, I'm done. I'm done forgetting all of this. You need to let me remember. And he was like, okay, if you want that, fine. And then I woke up back in my body and just kind of dismissed it as like a weird experience. But, oh, and I should also mention, when I was there, all of the befuddlement was gone. I did not feel intoxicated. Everything was crystal clear. Because I always feel a little bit befuddled when I'm taking shrooms. Like, I can't quite think straight, but that was all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was crystal clear, and I had this conversation, and then I woke back up in my body, and I was basically crying and upset. And then I proceeded to have, like, a week-long existential crisis about whether or not that was real and whether or not it really happened.
Mm-hmm.
When I finally settled on no, that didn't happen, that night I was driving to work, and on my way to work, I see a light in the distance in the sky, and it passes from my left, and it's flying downward a little bit, and it winds up behind some trees. And I'm driving down the road, and I hit a point where, like, I'm passing the trees it went behind, and there is a 40... This was no more than 150 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It was very low, and it was, like, 40, 50 feet long. It was kind of too... rhombus? Is that the diamond shape?
Yeah.
Like the square? It was like two rhombuses stacked on each other with one lower and one higher. And there were three lights on it. There were two white lights and then a light in the back that was red. I did the whole paranormal apathy thing. I just looked at it and I was like, huh, that's interesting. What the hell is that thing? And kept driving to work. Like, I didn't pull over to look closer or anything. My windows were down. It was making absolutely no noise, which if it was a helicopter, you would be hearing that.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think there's a lot of helicopters that size either. And then I got to work, and I got out of my car, and I was like, wait, what was that? Like, what just happened? Somebody else had to have seen it. Like, there were people on the road. I live, you know, 15, 20 minutes from Seattle. Like, there's always somebody else on the road, and I can't imagine that nobody else saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But so then I kind of got to the point, like, a week, like, maybe 2 weeks after that, where I managed to dismiss that. And then, same thing, driving to work, and, like, a 15, 20-foot-long craft literally buzzed my car in the parking lot while I was getting out of it.
Oh, wow.
It was very similarly shaped. Like, honestly, if I had to describe, like, the physical characteristics, it kind of looked like a stealth bomber, fighter, whatever, but it was making zero noise. And it came down to within 15 feet of the top of my car, flew over my head, and then just, like, yeeted itself. And, like, just, it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
No noise at all.
Wow. Both of these sightings, the first one of the two that happened after this interdimensional mushroom experience, or whatever you want to call it, when you decide that wasn't real, then you see a UFO in quote-unquote real life, in waking life, and you said, you know, you're trying to dismiss that one, and you see another one. It's like just tapping you on the shoulder each time. Like, it's not letting you dismiss it, you know?
I think it's because I asked to remember.
Oh, I didn't put that together, yeah.
It just, like, kicked the door down. And that was right before I had the experience about hearing the street sweeper sound. I had like a 45-minute panic attack after that. I had to sit down. But, yeah, it was right before the street sweeper thing. It was before I realized that I don't think the Borg thing was a dream, because I just completely shoved that to the side as growing up and just, like, never even thought about it. She had a weird experience when I realized that I don't think that was a dream. I was at work, and I work in a big retail store, and we're pretty much by ourselves most of the night because everybody's really spread out stocking shelves.
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking, and I just, like, had the epiphany of, I don't think that was a dream. It kind of popped into my head out of nowhere. And then there was, like, a bang, bang on one of the shelves next to me. Like, somebody hit the shelf really hard twice. And there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm. This is what can I say? But in my mind, this is sort of the way the other works, right? It's like,
yeah.
It's like, A, it's weird, but B, it's like, yeah, no, we're not going to let you think the way you think. And then when you said in that, in whatever state, you know, you're in on mushrooms, you said, I want to remember. And now it's like, oh yeah, you're going to remember. Like, you yeah. asked for it. So now you're going to remember. It's very weird the way it works. I think possibly because it's non-human intelligence, you know, it doesn't work like the way we work.
Yeah, no, it absolutely doesn't. But the part that's still weirding me out is, why was I begging to come home? Like, that's kind of the part that stood out to me. Like, I was devastated, like, begging to come back.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
I did once get my mother to admit to being abducted. And she said specifically that she was abducted when she was pregnant with me. And, like, I don't know if I take the whole starseed thing seriously. It's kind of, I don't want to be rude, but it feels a little silly in a lot of the cases.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't know. She was abducted when she was pregnant with me, and I've never felt like I belong here.
That's very interesting.
And I don't understand people. Mm-hmm. Like, just our species as a whole is incredibly depressing to me because we're so cruel.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I don't understand how people, like, I cry about it fairly regularly. I don't understand how people can do the things they do to other people
mm-hmm.
on a large scale.
Yeah, I understand that. I don't know if that is indicative of, you know, some sort of, for lack of a better word, some sort of starseed or some sort of other thing mixed into your being, or if the flip side of that is, I think oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, the people that have these kind of connections, especially these ongoing connections with the other, tend to be more emotionally sensitive people, I think.
I would agree with that, actually. Everybody I know who's had weird experiences has been, like, very emotionally sensitive. I'm not going to say I've never done any bad things in my life. Like, I used to be an absolute monster when I was a teenager. And I did some pretty bad things to people I cared about a lot. But, like, I'm very much grown out of that.
Mm-hmm. So does your mom... So she's pretty convinced of at least the one abduction experience she's had.
Yeah, I got her to admit to once, but I'm not even on speaking terms with my mother anymore. So I guess I could call her and ask her about it, but it would be kind of weird hitting her up after like a year and a half with no contact.
Mm,
yeah. I'd be like, hey, you remember that time you said you were abducted?
Yeah. Yes, family is difficult.
Yeah, very.
What's the story about being slapped through a tent?
Okay, this is actually kind of a fun story. So I used to build hiking trails. I was in a program called the California Conservation Corps, and we would go on what's called a spike, which is where you would go and you would camp out in a place that's really far out for 8 days, and then you'd come back, you'd have 6 days off, and then you'd go work for another 8 days. So we go up to an area by Crescent City. We were camping on the Tolowa Dunes doing invasive species removal. And me and my roommate were kind of like a little more like senior on the crew. Mm-hmm. And he was the only person on our crew that could drive the state vehicles. So him and I went ahead of everybody and we were like starting to set up camp. And it's just him, me, and one other person there. And I have aphantasia, which is relevant to the story. I don't know if you know what that is.
I do not.
Aphantasia is the inability to form a mental image.
Ah.
I can't see things in my head unless I'm in like a deep meditative state. It's just impossible for me.
Huh.
I think that has to do something with my being sensitive. I don't think that's the cause of it. But whenever something weird happens, or not every time, but when weird things happen, I will get like crystal clear images flashing in my mind.
That's very, very interesting. Yeah.
But we get there and I have a flash, a mental image, and it is like a crying, bloody, naked Native American woman. And I kind of, you know, have like a little panic attack, and I tell my roommate what's going on because he was into weird stuff too. And I had got to the point where I had to sit down. It was really strong. I was just overcome with emotions. So I don't think it was that night, but two nights later, we were in our tents, and the woman is back in my mind. Like, she pops back up screaming and it wakes me up. Mm. And then my tent just like bends inward and smacks me in the face. I'm kind of glad I had to leave early that spike, because I was pretty done being there. And I actually started looking into it for this show, like for this episode, after I mentioned it to you. And it turns out like the site we were camping on was the place where there was a super bad massacre of natives at the Tolowood Dunes. Because I also told my boss what happened. And so he looked into it and he got back and he's like, oh yeah, they call this Blood Gulch because there's a bunch of people got buried here.
Oh, wow. Huh.
But I didn't look into the details of the massacre until just like this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really bad. It was one of the bloodiest massacres in U.S. history.
Mm. I know something reached through my tent. My mind would go immediately to Bigfoot. Why did you go to Ghost?
I didn't see like a physical presence there.
Mm-hmm.
It being associated with like the waking up to the image of that woman screaming at me,
mm-hmm.
it just kind of made sense.
Now, did you like see the form of a hand come through the vinyl of the tent, or did it just happen too quick?
It just happened too quick. It was just the tent like deformed inward and smacked me.
Did it hurt? Was it hard?
No, it did not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It was not hard enough to like harm me.
Right. What do you do at this point?
I go back to sleep. I kind of sit there and I'm like, oh, what the hell was that? I got to be up at 5:30 in the morning to work. I'm going back to bed, but it did happen at 3 a.m. Like, I checked the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went back to sleep.
How are we able to do that? Like, and I say we because I've done it myself. You just roll over and go back to sleep after something weird happens.
I don't know. It's the whole like paranormal apathy thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it's so common. Mm-hmm. Like, so many people have these experiences.
Oh, yeah. I hear about it all the time. It's so weird. You mentioned earlier not being able to wake your sister up when you were, you know, things were happening in your room when you were a kid. That's another thing. You know, not being able to wake people up. It's like it's not for them for whatever reason. There's so much with this stuff that there's these huge question marks around it. I was on a Bigfoot show a few weeks ago being interviewed, and these are very, very flesh and blood type guys. And the guy's like, you know, I'm talking about that aspect of the paranormal. And he's like, that happened to me. He's like, we were in a cabin and Bigfoot was essentially attacking this cabin and banging on the side and throwing rocks at it. And he said, there was like six guys in the cabin. I couldn't wake up. Couldn't wake one of them up. He said, I was pounding on their chest. He said, I was so afraid and not one of them would wake up. I said, uh-huh. That sounds natural.
Yeah, perfectly normal flesh and blood creature.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, wow, okay. Now that's really interesting.
I have had like the lamest near-death experience ever. Which I've heard there's a good portion of people involved in these things wind up having them.
Yeah, what happened?
Okay, this is kind of a sad story. When I was 19, I was house sitting for my grandmother out in the country with the private lake. And I have a couple of friends over. We party, wild out. We all get drunk. Everybody else goes to bed, but me and my best friend at the time. I'd known since like junior high school, like we literally lived together. We decided to go out on the canoe and go, you know, just enjoy it out there. We're sharing a cigarette and he goes to lean. He like stands up to lean over to hand it to me and the canoe flips and we hit the water and he just starts doing the like panicking and flailing thing once we hit the water.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to get behind him and put my arm around his chest so I can pull him to shore, but he's struggling so fiercely that in the process of trying to help him, I almost drowned. There was just a moment where I felt my consciousness kind of like expanding backwards, mm-hmm. and the world started to get dim. And then I relived my entire life in like a moment.
Wow.
It wasn't like watching my life flash before my eyes. It was literally reliving the entire thing up to that point in like the blink of an eye. I heard something say no. And then I just like zipped forward. Everything came back into focus and I was back in my body. And I had to like push my friend off and swim to shore to save myself.
Was he okay? Yeah.
No, he drowned.
Oh my goodness. Oh geez, I'm yeah, so sorry.
I watched him die.
And, oh my goodness.
At the moment I believe he died, I felt like this huge burst release of energy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of brutal. Man, I'm so sorry that happened.
You know, I am too. I feel really bad for everybody involved in his life. And I'm not like, oh yeah, that happened for a reason. But it's just, it's one of those things that happened and there's nothing that can be done about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I still cry about it. I kind of cry a lot. But I'm still like devastated about it. But I do have to relate it back to the experience I had on mushrooms, speaking to that entity where he said, you haven't experienced enough sorrow yet.
Mm.
So, I don't know. Like, am I just here to be sorrowful?
Wow.
I don't want to think so.
Yeah, that's really, really rough. No, I don't think anyone's here just for that. But obviously that is a part of life, and it's something that we're all going to face one way or another, and in different measures. You know, you certainly had a heaping helping of it right there. So did he not know how to swim, or was he just too
inebriated? Yeah, he knew how to swim. He was just extremely intoxicated.
Mm.
You know what? This is actually related. A couple days before this happened, we were like way less drunk, and we decided to go for a ride out on the canoe. And I asked him, hey, you know, do you want to wear a life vest? And he's like, oh, no, I can swim. And we go out on the lake, and it is dead quiet. Like there are no sounds, just absolutely silent. And we're sitting in roughly the same spot where he drowned. And all of a sudden, there's like a horrible screaming noise from the shore. I'm pretty sure it was a fox. I'm not saying it was something like supernatural, but it just went from dead quiet to this like horrible like woman screaming being murdered sound.
Mm.
And so I don't know if it's like that a warning.
I mean, if you were in Ireland, you'd say that was a banshee, you know?
Yeah, I've actually thought that since. Like,
yeah.
But it was just so easy to dismiss as a fox.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I am a firm believer that the other can use sort of natural things to get his point across. In the instance of my raccoon attack, you know, that was definitely a raccoon. It wasn't a goblin, but I do think it was bound up in whatever else was going on with me and that location and all the missteps I had made. So was it a fox? Probably. But was it a fox scream with meaning? You know, there's the big question.
Yeah, I do think there was meaning to it. I'm not a big fan of coincidences.
Yeah, me either. Yeah.
I mean, I try not to attribute every single coincidence that happens to the other. You know, because that's just a road to madness, but...
Well, I feel like it's akin to the big dream, little dream thing, right? It's like sort of like big, yeah, meaningful coincidence and then like little, oh, that's funny kind of things. Wow, that's intense. That's a really, really intense experience. Do you want to tell us about these disappearing objects?
Oh, yeah, this is kind of a fun one. I'll run through these real quick. I lost my wedding ring, or engagement ring at work, and it was gone for like 3 or 4 days, and I'm sitting at home, and I'm like, hey, can I have my ring back? Just as a joke. And then very shortly after, I picked up a Bluetooth speaker, and the ring just like fell off of it. I lost my work keys. they kind of just disappeared off my keyring. It's like a key to locked cases in a forklift, and they just kind of vanish. So I go to work. I tell my boss. He's like, "Oh, it's no big deal." And then the next week, I'm getting ready for work, and I go to put my boot on, and the keys just fell out of the boot.
I'm laughing because this like the sense of humor of the other. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, I was pretty amused at the time and grateful for getting my ring back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing menacing about it.
My wife thought she had lost her wedding ring one time, and she went to an event at the kids' elementary school when they were young, and my son got out of the car and picked up a ring. It was her ring. It was just like, there's no reason that it should have been there.
No, absolutely not. It was just a gift.
Yeah. Yeah.
To have it back.
Yeah. I feel like these are reports. Whatever this is, these are things that are... Because I'm guessing that you didn't have any recollection of leaving your wedding ring on top of that speaker.
No, I lost it at work. Mm-hmm. Like, I had it. I came back. I was getting ready to go home. I realized it was gone. And then it just, like, reappeared a couple days to a week later after I had said, "Hey, can I have my ring back?"
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I just like immediately found it after that.
You know, I don't like diagnosing people with this because I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but there are some people who the other just kind of takes a liking to them or follows them around most of their life, for better or for worse. It sounds like that's just your lot. It also sounds like you're dealing with it pretty well. I mean, you know, it's weird stuff. It's never easy to deal with, but you're not letting it dominate your life, it seems like. You know, you're kind of...
I mean, I'm starting to have a hard time working graveyards, but that's like the worst of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'd be like walking out to my... It's happened twice where I was like walking out to my car and something, like I hear something charge me, like it's running straight at me, and then I turn and there's nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just editing a show with a guy who was talking about hearing something come. So he was hunting and hearing something like come at him, and then it never comes out. And he's like, "I know somebody walked up on me." He thought it was another person. And I told him this is the Bigfoot bluff charge. And you can hear this on, you know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch Chronicles and all these, you know, Bigfoot experiencer shows. These people talk about, "Oh, I was bluff charged." To my knowledge, 90% plus of these don't include a sighting with the creature. They just hear something coming through the woods. And it never breaks through the brush. They just hear it. It sounds like it's coming at them. You know, this happened to us a couple of times, Chad and I. So I put that in that same category as the approaching something that never arrives.
I would be so shook if there was a Bigfoot at my apartment complex, because we are not at all rural.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're in the middle of a suburb of Seattle, basically.
No, I'm not saying it was Bigfoot. I'm just saying whatever. You know, the other just acts the same, like across. Like, well, you've heard me talk about Bigfoot and poltergeist. You know, it's very, very similar. The difference being some occasionally people see creatures with Bigfoot. But otherwise, it's, you know, pretty much one-to-one comparison. You know, bad smells, rocks being thrown, weird language, et cetera, et cetera.
Stuff being knocked off of shelves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a lot of poltergeist activity at work.
I do not doubt it. Do you find this stuff comes in waves? Like a bunch of stuff will happen?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There have been periods of my life where for like years nothing would happen. And then there are periods where it's just like nonstop strange.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what that is, but yeah, that's a thing for sure.
Yeah. Like as soon as I had that experience on the mushrooms, like my life has been going weird since then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my work was haunted before that. Like, I have multiple coworkers who will attest to this. Our building is creepy. Even my fiance has seen shadow people in the building, and she's like paranormally blind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has like the null energy and just negates paranormal things for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't always a bad thing if you don't feel like dealing with anything.
No, honestly, it's one of the things I love about her.
Yeah.
It's like, we've only had two weird things happen together, one of which involved missing time, and the other was like a weird reality flicker where it was like the world got turned off and turned back, like rebooted.
So how did that work?
We were sitting in our living room playing games, like online.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like... I don't know how to describe it. It literally just felt like the world got turned off and turned back on. Our electricity didn't go out, but like both of us got disconnected from the games we were playing, and like our internet just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had the feeling of we had just got rebooted.
Yes. Yeah, somebody hit the galactic reset button or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, Jonathan. I don't want to predict anything, but I think you're probably going to have more experiences with this. And when you do, please do a follow-up with us.
Absolutely.
Hopefully they're all generally positive.
That's certainly what I'm hoping for, because I don't want to deal with any more negativity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks so much for sharing your stories.
All right. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it.
Ray R. Myers. Who is this Ray R. Myers?
He's an armless musician.
He's the world's famous armless musician. And this is his life story, as told in words and pictures.
The best photo is he could drive a stick shift, which I can't do, and he doesn't even have arms.
Yeah.
He has a driver's license.
Yeah.
His left foot controls all the pedals, and his right foot he steers with. He's amazing.
I didn't even check the date on this. Is there a date inside? Or do you know the dates where he was? He was a circus guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Would this be like considered like a pitch book?
Yeah, it's sort of a later pitch pamphlet.
It's like what they would have sold.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
if he performed somewhere.
And people came to see him, yeah. No, there's no date in this. You have any clue?
I'm going to guess 30s, but I didn't look up his story.
You're familiar with him, just not the dates that he...
Yeah, he's a little bit later than the circus people I tend to know better.
So it looks like he played slide guitar with his feet. I'm guessing he's using a slide. I'm guessing he's not making chords with his feet, because that would be quite amazing.
Who knows? Did you see the picture of him driving the car? Look at the back page.
I like the one of him shooting a gun.
Oh, well, you got to be able to still hunt.
You know... People will...
They'll find a way.
They'll find a way, yeah.
Look, did you find the picture from driving the car?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
It's worth it just to see that picture.
Driving a car is no handicap to Ray R. Myers, the armless musician. He drives a standard equipped car and is said to be the only licensed armless driver in the world. He holds Pennsylvania and West Virginia's driver's license, having taken rigid road tests to obtain them. By the car, I'm going to guess 40s, maybe?
Yeah, 30s or 40s, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not a car guy. Not a car guy, yeah. A really neat piece of, like, a circus ephemera here. So I will put a photo of this in the show notes. If you click on that, it'll take you to our Etsy shop where you can purchase that and other curiosities of the week, those that are left. Also at Etsy, original artwork and prints, including the artwork for this episode.
Which I've yet to do.
You can get copies of my books there. If you get them from Etsy, I'll sign them. You don't even have to ask. I sign them before they leave. Some of my music is there. Strange Familiars t-shirts, stickers, and more. Our shop name is Lost Grave. But if you type in Strange Familiars, you should see our stuff come up. I want to thank everybody who shops at Lost Grave, because that helps the podcast as well. It all goes into one pot.
Like, literally, we have nickels in a big container. A big pot,
yeah. It's actually a coffee can. We'll call it a pot. All right. I guess that's it. I got to run and start getting ready for Alpha Twitch Day. I am Princess of Alpha Twitch Day.
You are the princess, yeah. So, like, it's time to get out that crown and start polishing it.
My sash.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I get a new sash every year.
Yeah, 10th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll get a new tiara as well.
I bet you will.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back soon with more Strange Familiars.
Looking for something to do after Halloween is over? Are you into the strange, bizarre, and unusual? On November 3rd, 4th, and 5th, the Strange Realities Conference is coming back to Nashville, Tennessee, and streaming online. Come join us for 3 days exploring mysteries, supernatural, the occult, weird history, and more, featuring lectures, presentations, and workshops by Tim Banal, Zach Hunt, Cheslin Vance, Bryn Collier, Tobias Whalen, Brent Rains, Joshua Kutchin, Kiki Dombrowski, Recluse, Nathan Isaac, Christopher Ernst, Aaron Gullius, David Metcalf, Timothy Renner, Mallory Sawitzki, Soraya Azcap, and special guest Steve Berg as your master of ceremonies. Make sure to join us for the fun and informative weekend online and at SIR Nashville November 3rd and 4th and online only November 5th. Tickets are available at strangerealitiesconference.com.
Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Hollow Arts. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. Strange Familiars is on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars. We also have the Strange Familiars Gathering group there, which you can join and comment and share interesting things. We're on Instagram, @strangefamiliars, all one word, smushed together, no underscores or spaces or anything like that. And we're on the web at strangefamiliars.com.
Woo!
Skies of red, where do